It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was your biggest takeaway after hearing Jed Hoyer explain why the Cubs finished with 83 wins for the second straight year and missed the playoffs yet again? Not having made the postseason in a full season since 2018, how much pressure does Jed Hoyer face now?
Yeah, I was surprised at the lack of urgency, if I can say it that way. I'm not saying that he doesn't feel it, but I thought he was very calm about everything. I think the reality is you just finished with 83 wins with two different managers, and you upgraded significantly. And I understand he said that's why they didn't give Craig a one-year contract. But if you had, if you hadn't fired David Ross last year, wouldn't you have had to fire him this year if you finished 83 wins again? And I'm not saying anybody's in trouble, and I'm not calling for jobs or anything like that. It's just I did not hear the articulation of how you go about ensuring that you're going to be the 90-win team that the manager talked about being on a year-in, year-out basis. And I think that instead – Jed sort of took the avenue of, well, this is what we're in the effort of doing right now. We're attempting to do that, and to do that, everybody has to live up to their projections. And by the way, only three teams were projected to win over 90 games at the beginning of the year, and that's just sort of the reality of where you are in baseball. And if you notice that our salary cap structure is really good, and we've got all these young players come in, so we are building ourselves up to be just that. It did not have that like kind of thunderbolt moment, like, you know, and when we get Ohtani, we will win the. You know, I mean, there wasn't that feeling that they've got to be in on everyone. The very fact that you got so many guys that are five-win players for every playoff team would imply that you better get one of those. And that wasn't the takeaway from that news conference.
My takeaway was he kept talking about the youth and the currency of the youth and the young players and having seven guys in the top 100, and they're coming. And I think he's going to try to figure out how to get them up here sooner than later. And he thinks that they are very well set up. And we, as fans, or at least me as a fan, should be very excited. And I don't know why that should make me excited. I wanted a follow-up there. Why? When Cub fans should be excited, why?
I think I heard a guy talk like he knows something the rest of us don't. And I feel like Jed Hoyer feels confident in the way that he has put together this organization because of the reasons Dustin just referred to. Jed Hoyer is proud of the talent in the Cubs organization. He sounded like an executive who is counting on that talent to change the story and change the results in Chicago, where they need to be back in the playoffs. the Cubs are a big market team that not having big market results. But I feel like we heard from Jed Hoyer, somebody who feels comfortable with the way things are. I wanted him to sound more uncomfortable. I wanted him to make everybody more uneasy. I wanted him to make us feel the way we often do after hearing from Craig Counsell, who is honest to a fault. And I think that Craig Counsell saying the quiet part out loud about needing the 90-win roster was exactly what everybody needed to hear in Chicago. This isn't good enough. The Cubs are running in place. We thought that they were taking a step in the direction of behaving like a big market team when they fired David Ross, beloved Grandpa Rossi, and brought in the guy to do more with more because he did more with less in Milwaukee. Didn't happen. So now there is urgency. 5 years, Jed's under 500, and they really haven't had a playoff victory since he's arrived at the top job. I wanted to hear him sound like that bothered him as much as it bothered the fan base. What I heard was a guy confident that there's talent in the system that will bring them back to the playoffs.
So this is a question I struggle with.
Do you believe Cubs outfielder Cody Bellinger will have a lot of options in free agency as Jed Hoyer predicted? Do you believe, as the Cubs seem to, that he will opt out of the $27.5 million player option for 2025?
It only takes one team. It only takes one team to convince themselves that Cody Bellinger at $30 million or $75 for three, whatever it is, a better deal. It only takes one team to make that offer to lure him away. And it sounds like the Cubs expect him to put himself in that situation. Scott Boras gambled and lost last offseason. That had to be embarrassing for him. And I think that this offseason, you wonder where the salaries are going. You talk to people in the baseball world, and they have an anticipation because of the way the RSNs have been in decline, because of the television revenues that aren't there the way they used to be, that free agency is going to be something that people don't expect in terms of salaries. They're not going to be where they typically are. If that's the case, Scott Boras could gamble and lose two off seasons in a row, and maybe Cody Bellinger comes back to the Cubs that way. But could be too late. If he opts out, he becomes a free agent. Jed expects that to happen. I don't know if the Cubs need to do anything. If he opted in, I think I would be happy to have him back, because maybe next year he could outperform his the back of his baseball card and expectations. But I do think he's going to opt out, and I wouldn't be surprised after hearing yesterday if he's with a different team next year.
I hate to say I don't know, but this one's a head-scratcher. I mean, he can play a couple of positions well, but I don't know about very well. He's fine and right. He's fine at first base, but he's not like an all-star at three different positions. He kind of is.
Right field. Didn't he win a gold glove in right field?
When? Back when he was the rookie of the year and the World Series MVP. But, David, that now seems like a career ago. He's fine. But listen, if somebody wants to pay him over $30 million, you know, give him a $150 million deal or two, great. Go get it. Absolutely. But just because he sticks around at $27 to $30 million, whatever it exactly is, should not handcuff the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are kind of stuck with this one. I don't know what else is going to happen. If he wants to go, I would say they'd probably let him go, as we mentioned earlier. I get it. The guy didn't sign right away. He was kind of a late addition. He didn't start the season the way you'd want. I mean, I get it. I understand that the agent, the super agent, a little embarrassed on this one, has a little egg on his face. So maybe he's going to try to squeeze him to get more money out of him. Didn't sound like they were that interested in that. And I think he better be careful about how he plays this one. So if he's back, if Bellinger's back, I think the Cubs will put on a bright smiley face and they will welcome him and everything is great. But the reality is that you don't need him as much next year as you needed him this year, because you got a young player that has taken over in center field. Because are you going to pay this guy $27 million to be a first baseman, to be a DH, and to play in right field when you decide to kind of rotate him through the, I mean, I'm not dissing the guy. I really appreciated the season that he had before last year. 2 years ago, he was real good. You could use that again. I don't want to be impolite about it, but if he chooses out, that might be the best thing for them. They'll have a ton of money and be able to do a lot.
2019, he won the Gold Glove playing right field for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Take that.
My observations of him in right field this year for the Chicago Cubs, he was fine.
He's better than Suzuki.
Again, David, you're better than Suzuki
he's
in right field.
He's a Gold Glover in right field. If you have a Gold Glover in center field, you got a Gold Glover in left field. You got a Gold Glove outfield.
David, that was how many years ago? He wasn't a Gold Glover this year in any position.
That's a big question.
Voice of Bruce Levine. He's here at 8:25. What was the most surprising result in the opening games of the MLB playoffs? Did anything genuinely surprise you? Do you feel any of these series are effectively over with just one game done?
Well, I mean, the one thing that really did surprise me was the Kansas City Royals winning at Baltimore. I didn't see that one coming. And the way that Baltimore failed to get anything going was surprising to me. Look, these are short series, so there's more impact for one game. But I don't think anybody is eliminated in one game in the playoffs. However, it was weird that all the road teams were winning, right? It was weird that any team, I mean, look what the Mets went through, and then they come out and win? Really? I mean, that was pretty wild. And if the Brewers don't get their act together like before yesterday, it's too late. I just was amazed at the whole momentum thing and the idea that you have a couple teams that are having to play because of a rainout on a Monday and they win on a Tuesday. And I really enjoyed watching all of it, except I have a friend in Baltimore and he was going nuts, and I don't blame him. It was a rough one. I thought that team was going to be better all the way around, and that was not good.
The Mets scoring 8 runs surprised me against the Brewers. That surprised me. I don't think any of these series are effectively over, even though all of them, could end today. We could come in here tomorrow. I would be surprised. I would be surprised if any of them, to be honest, are over tomorrow, except maybe the Padres. Like, I think the Padres could eliminate the Braves because I think the Chris Sale news, him being scratched
from terrible,
right? He went from the terrible game 2 starter in that doubleheader to the, well, now he'll start game 1 if the Braves could have won game number 1, to getting scratched, just scratching your head, to now out. That might be just too much to overcome, but I think all the series will be game 3s.
Max Fried goes for the Braves because Chris Sale is unavailable. I think you look at the Brewers. Can't believe the Brewers have lost 9 of their last 10 playoff games. 9 of the last 10 in what they're no longer calling Craig Tober in Milwaukee. How do you do that? That's really, I'm a little surprised by the Mets. But the fact that the Tigers and the Royals both won a playoff game yesterday, the Tigers and the Royals, both teams in the White Sox division, the Guardians don't have to play because they're too good to be in this round. So the AL Central, stand up, because they are very good.
But that was the Tigers game, right? That's their pitcher.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just saying.
But the Tigers didn't have a game 6 weeks ago.
That's right.
The Tigers game 6 weeks ago was getting ready. They were planning their postseason press conference to tell you why they didn't get to the postseason again. But yesterday, they're good. The Royals 1-0 in the playoffs. Yikes, against that lineup.
Can you believe that?
Wow. A lot of stuff to like. The road teams, though, the biggest takeaway before the Padres did what they did in San Diego, the road teams winning tells me that home field advantage overrated in October.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals at the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
That's a good question.
Have you thought any more about what Coach Wonsett said about DeAndre Swift here yesterday?
I'm telling you now, and I'm a broken record, DeAndre Swift is not your best inside runner. Okay. The runs that he gets for two, I believe with all my heart that Roschon or Herbert would be getting four, okay? I just believe that.
Is that obvious to coach? Do you think it's as obvious to the Bears coaches? Do they agree with this? And how patient do you think they will be with DeAndre Swift?
I think they have 8 million reasons to be patient with DeAndre Swift, and I think they will be. I was surprised Dave was that direct with giving up on DeAndre Swift, and I respect where he's coming from and a lot of people who watch him and come to similar conclusions. I think where I get a little bit, you react to it more is that I don't know when Roschon Johnson became Earl Campbell. I don't know where this suggestion that he is going to be this can't-miss downhill runner that's going to get you the tough yard because he's proven. Wait a second. Second year, I don't know that he had a great rookie year. Is he really that good of a runner? I don't know. We haven't seen a lot. But a lot of people believe that Roschon Johnson, the way he is spoken about, he sounds like a great running back. Is he? I don't know. But I don't want to... I'm not ready to give up on DeAndre Swift yet. The Bears are finding their way with the offensive line. I think he could be a big part of their running game still. He is the, I think, whether it's an anomaly or just a different back in that, I think that what you saw on Sunday was he gets, you talk about the lather that he builds up. Maybe he needs a good screen pass or a swing pass or something happened in the passing game in the open field to get him going and feel better about the running inside or outside. But I would think it's premature to give up on DeAndre Swift, even though I love that Dave Wonsett has and said that, and he doesn't sound like a broken record to me. He's just being honest on what he sees on tape, and I want him to do that.
Well, I think the key is between the tackles. He said between the tackles. And I'm not ready to give Roschon Johnson the ball 20 times, but if you were talking, usually it's the opposite. Your change of pace back is somebody like DeAndre Swift. In this Bears offense, your change of pace back is somebody like Roschon. You know, that's what they're looking for. But again, give him the ball. When you need 2 or 3 yards, give him the ball. I'm fine with it. He runs hard. He's built differently than DeAndre Swift. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because DeAndre Swift managed 114 yards through the first three games, and he was averaging 1.8 yards a carry. I wonder if he was averaging 0.4 yards a carry after first contact. He's not a guy that runs through a lot of tackles. That is just the reality of it. And what happened in that game is that he hit a hole. He found a hole, and he got a 36-yard run, and that changed his season. That changed his numbers, and he had a great game as a result of that. And it helped that he had 7 catches and did well there, but he is not a run-through-contact guy. I think that's what Dave is seeing. That is what Dave is saying. And I think that it's very interesting to me because Roschon Johnson, as we all know, started his college career. He was recruited as a quarterback. He goes into Texas, and injuries led them to move him to running back, and he played behind Bijan Robinson, for the majority of his career. And then he comes in to the NFL, and he has kind of a straight line style. He's a stand-up kind of guy. So he's a very powerful guy, can get contact and will run over people, and he will gain yards through contact, which is, I think, what Dave meant when he said that the other two guys will get four, where he might get two. And I think, Dustin, you're actually correct there. I think he's talking about between the tackles. That's what he said. So I don't know that Roschon Johnson is going to be Earl Campbell or anything like that, but compared to DeAndre Swift, he's kind of Earl Campbell. He can run over people. He can make contact. He's a bigger, stronger dude, and he's got more weight. I mean, I was surprised, honestly, that DeAndre Swift is kind of as light as he is, right? He's not a big, powerful back. He's slight of build. And, you know, this is a guy that's best used in space. And unfortunately, with the Bears' offensive line, he doesn't find himself in space very often. It's interesting.
I mean, it's a great question.
Where are you at with the leadership of the 2024 Bears, whether it's from the eight captains, the coaches, rank and file? Will we learn more about team communication this week, or is that just a subject for losing weeks? What are they going to do about the 10 penalties, including five of the pre-snap variety?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that we heard a lot about their communication. We heard, you know, blow by blow of the meeting with the coach, and I don't know if everybody was following. We kind of got that during the week. It was all over the national broadcast. They were talking about it, and they had details, and they had different stuff than just the "it's not Pop Warner." It was kind of weird, man. It didn't play well nationally. It didn't make the Bears look like the most together team with their communication. And, feel free, tell us everything that happens. We're always interested. But if I'm in charge of the group, I'd be like, hey, don't be telling everybody everything that happens around here. Try to keep things to yourself a little bit, you know? Maybe don't play up your huge role as captain and great leader and all the rest of it. So I think that is for losing weekends. I think that is more about kind of self-protection, if you will. And I felt like they threw that coach, Shane Waldron, under the bus last week. Maybe he deserved it. Maybe he got the message and maybe he responded to it. But it's coming again. You wait. They lose to Carolina. The Red Rifle has a big game. There's going to be squawking.
There will be squawking. That's a good way to put it. I just, when you have eight captains, do you have one? It's way too many captains. Eight captains is ridiculous. Four, six tops. I think four is probably the right number. And then I didn't mind the idea. Was that Eberflus the first year? Was that when they had like the rotating captain that had like a really good game or made sense because of the team they were facing? There was some type of built-in reason to elevate that person to be the captain that way. There's too many. You need more Indians, okay, and less Chiefs.
And none of it has anything to do with what happens on Sunday in terms of the outcome. You could have 12 captains. It won't affect whether or not you're...
No, the talking has something to do with what happens on Sundays.
The way that communication affects the outcome is if you have a quarterback or an offensive line or wide receivers or tight end or running backs that aren't familiar enough with the cadence to get off the ball when they should, and they're jumping early, or that is communication. The stuff that happens during the week is noise. It's just noise. And, you know, the fact that we are privy to this noise last week is all Mercedes Lewis' fault. He went public with stuff he shouldn't have gone public with. I love it because it's what we do, and we talk about stuff, and it's great for fans and media to get in, you know, in the room with Mercedes Lewis and Shane, trembling Shane Waldron, and I mean, that's the way he depicted him.
Yes, that's
shame
right.
On him.
Yeah.
So this week, you know what the communication I would have done? Ryan Poles calls Mercedes Lewis into his office, and he tells him to stop talking. Or you want to keep talking, big dog? Just don't bark so loudly and let people know what was said. Because that was where everybody got on board. And in this world of aggregation, it became a national storyline. Because national media who cover the Bears from afar need things that are easy and digestible in little nuggets. You know what's digestible in little nuggets? What Mercedes Lewis said last week about Shane Waldron walking on eggshells. And all of the other rhetoric contained in one nice, smooth, easy soundbite. And that can't happen.
How many snaps has that guy played?
Too many. I don't get it.
I'm saying Mercedes Lewis does not play. He's not playing.
I don't understand why he's here. I may be the only guy in town, but I don't understand the fascination here. All he's done this year is create a distraction.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Who is the best defensive player on the new look Bulls now that Alex Caruso has been traded? Is it an obvious answer or something of a work in progress?
I wondered if this was a trick question. Because I do think it's kind of obvious. Isn't Patrick Williams has got to be that guy, right? If there's a guy coming in who's you look at Alex Caruso being gone. Alex Caruso was a guy that guarded everyone from Durant to Russell Westbrook. I mean, who point guards and power forwards. I think Patrick Williams is the guy who has the most defensive versatility right now. It's not Lonzo Ball, who healthy, if that ever happens again, and it likely won't. Lonzo Ball used to be a guy that was elite defensively, all NBA defensive team worthy. But it's got to be Patrick Williams. There's not a big man that even qualifies for being in the conversation. And as far as it might be Io, you know, Io is very, very bold and athletic and defensive minded. But I think it's got to be Patrick Williams. And if it isn't Patrick Williams, the Bulls are in trouble.
Well, based on the dollars, which is a lot of what we've talked about through this whole pick six, is shouldn't it be Max LaVine? I mean, shouldn't he be the best defender? Shouldn't he be the best two-way player since he's a max guy? But to answer the question, work in progress.
I think it is kind of a work in progress because I think that that Io might end up being that guy, but I don't think of him. I remember him as an offensive player in college. I don't think of him as a great. I think he's not a great shooter. Does that mean he's got to be a great defender? I mean, your answer is good. That's a good answer. But Lonzo Ball would have been the answer if he didn't have a new knee. It is probably a work in progress because Caruso is gone and it was basically him and Lonzo in some order. Patrick Williams is probably the best guess about that right now, but you know they're that's a hole. They have a hole. They've got to develop that element, and they also probably lost their best big man defensive player. Drummond was probably their best kind of center rim protector, if you call it that. It's got to be Patrick Williams, but it's I think still a work in progress.
That's not good when the season right around the corner.
That's not good at all.
And nobody on the roster that really you look at as an emerging defensive weapon or even a guy that can give you 8 to 10 minutes as a stopper.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.